All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are recapping day three of the 2018 NFL Draft. I am joined by Jalen Muhammad. We're going to talk about Edo Smith. We're going to talk about Russell Gage. We're going to talk about Foye Oluwakun and much, much more.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet. Also the host of this podcast. You can find me tweeting hot takes about these Falcon draft picks on Twitter, at FalcFans. I am joined by none other than Jalen Muhammad. You know him as Jalen Muhammad on Twitter. He has been the guy that has been doing all those daily mock drafts. Now that the draft is finally here, Jalen, I'm sure that has lifted a great load off of your shoulders in terms of this Falcons 2018 draft class. How are you doing tonight?
I'm tired, and I have homework to do now.
Okay. So, with that being said, we will talk about the homework on the Falcons 2018 draft class. Let's talk about these day three picks. I know that you necessarily didn't have a huge background in some of these guys. They're pretty obscure. I had never even heard of Russell Gage until the Falcons drafted him.
Same. But
the Falcons take Edo Smith with their first pick on day three in the fourth round, the running back out of Southern Mississippi. I know that you don't necessarily know a ton about Edo Smith, but at least when you saw the pick, what were your thoughts and sort of what had, now that you've had to simmer on it for, I guess, 8 or 9 hours, what have been your thoughts since?
I was kind of disappointed because I wanted another defensive lineman. So, and then I saw the running back, and I was just like, all right, that's fine. We can get another one. Because I was legit just, like, at work, just searching up Foley Fadukasi's name, like, every, like, 20 minutes just to see if he got picked yet.
Yeah. I think I forgot who got him, but someone did get him later.
He went to the Jets.
Okay. Well, of course, the Jets got Nathan Shepard and Foley Fadukasi. Okay, so classic Todd Bowles.
Crazy.
Yeah, I thought Edo Smith, you know, I thought, because I talked with Kevin Knight about this on Thursday's episode, and then we sort of talked about the Falcons taking a running back, and it was like one of those things where it's like, yeah, if it's round 6 or 7, if they like a running back that falls to them, go ahead, pull the trigger, but otherwise it's not really a pressing need. But of course, the Falcons, as usual, zig when we think they're going to zag. They take the guy in the fourth round. Some people saw him as a reach because they saw him more as a 6th or 7th round guy. I think he's a good player. You know, we'll sort of see what his role is. You know, it does seem like this is a shot across the bow, or at least gives them some insurance in case Tevin Coleman is not re-signed after the season. Sort of, are your expectations that Edo Smith could sort of slide into that RB2 role, you know, next season? And possibly be that Coleman replacement?
I think Tevin is, I want to say he's gone, but he's like, he has like 2 toes like dipping in the water being gone.
Yeah, okay.
But I think he can do that because he's small, fast, and has good hands, so he should be straight there.
Yeah, I think the thing about Edo Smith is, you know, his running style is more like Devontae Freeman's than it is Tevin Coleman's. So I think he'll actually be a pretty good runner in this blocking scheme because we know the one knock on Tevin Coleman is like his patience and his vision isn't always up to par. Like, he's shown improvement.
And he falls over his own feet.
Yes. That's certainly something that Edo Smith is not necessarily known for. So, like, Coleman has improved in that regard, but it's not necessarily a huge, huge strength of his. So you can argue that Edo Smith is a more natural fit, scheme fit. I know that's a bad word when it comes to, you know, talking about Tevin Coleman and all that sort of thing. But I think the one underrated skill of Edo Smith is his ability in the passing game. You know, the games I saw, I thought he looked very natural and very fluid in that. And so sort of brings a little bit, you know, I know this is a little bit of a cop-out comparison, but a little bit of Tariq Cohen as far as his ability in that arena.
I was going to joke and say Stephen Ridley, just to like, okay. Falcons legend.
Okay. All right. So, you know, moving on a little bit from Edo Smith with the 2 6th-round picks, the Falcons had 2 7th-round picks. I know, you know, talking to you earlier this week and talking about sort of their having that Mr. Irrelevant picks, certainly I wasn't looking forward to having to watch all the draft coverage. But so I was kind of happy when they traded up, used package both of those seventh round picks to jump up into round six towards the end to get Russell Gage. I didn't really know anything about Russell Gage. Then a couple of picks later, they took Foye Oluokun. Sort of when you saw those picks, you were like, what was your reaction to those?
Who are these people and why are you here?
Well, I mean, you know, it's very clear that the Falcons were targeting special teams with the Gage pick because basically, like, he's our Matthew Slater, a wide receiver that was specialized as a gunner. You know, he dabbled a little bit on LSU's offense this past year, got a lot of jet sweeps, some screens, took a couple of deep shots, made some plays in the passing game. But basically, he's like Reggie Davis, Taylor Gabriel, light in terms of how he's going to be used in the offense, not suggesting that he's as good a player as a Taylor Gabriel. But primarily, it looks like they're going to use him as a gunner on punt coverage. And so, you know, two of the most prominent additions the Falcons made this offseason are a gunner in Russell Gage as well as Justin Bethel in free agency. So clearly the Falcons are trying to enhance their special teams. Would you agree?
Special teams matters.
There you go. The hashtag that will always live on forever. Let's talk about Foye Oluokun. We knew the Falcons were going to need some depth at the linebacker position. It's interesting that with Oluokun, given that his past as a safety as well as a linebacker, I think he played primarily safety his first 3 years at Yale and then moved to linebacker this year. A little bit of a tweener there, I guess, but that's really what the Falcons really like. They like those athletic guys that can cover at the linebacker position, can play in space. You know, I know you don't, I'm sure you weren't watching a ton of Ivy League football, but sort of what you've heard about Oluokun, sort of what were your thoughts on that pick?
I actually saw two games with him, so I actually kind of like recognize his name. Uh-huh. And I like it. I like him. Yeah, it was wild. I kind of like him just because, like, if like anybody goes down, I have more faith in him playing than like Kamal Ishmael. And that's no like knock to Ishmael, but like for the, what the Falcons like to do, I think he's better. He'd be a better like backup with like potential to be pretty good on special teams.
Yeah, I think you know, Ishmael's a good comparison. I think he's more athletic than Ishmael is. So, you know, I think there's some upside there. That's sort of what we see. You know, people talk about, oh, Kamal Ishmael could be the emergency backup for Keanu Neal at strong safety. And I'm like, I don't really like Kamal Ishmael as a safety really at all. The further you play him from the line of scrimmage, I think the worse he is as a player. So, like, Oluokun, you know, sort of if he can sort of dabble as that, I'll be curious to sort of see if they give him some safety reps or if they have somebody else do that this summer in training camp. But like, I like him a little bit more. Like, honestly, I watching him, you know, I watched one game of his in some highlights. So, you know, don't take my word as expertise or anything, but I think honestly, like his learning curve in terms of what he could contribute earlier in would be as a box strong safety in terms of the same role that we had Keanu Neal play, which is often played in a box and covering tight ends and whatnot. I think his learning curve in that regard is not as steep as it is as if you're trying to get him to be a linebacker, because he is a little undersized and sort of the physicality that you certainly would need to bring at that linebacker position. I don't think he's quite there, but you see flashes of potential growth potential there. So I think really probably what you said, he's probably going to play special teams, and if, you know, he can get some opportunities off the bench, you know, that'll be positive for his rookie season.
Should have kept Jermaine Grace.
They should have kept Jermaine Grace. Yes, they should have
kept Grace.
Yeah. Well, you know, don't make me go down the darkest timeline with reminiscing about, you know, Jermaine Grace, Brian Hill, both players that should be on this roster, and two draft picks that the Falcons probably could have used at other positions. You know, I'm sure people have gone through their mind about all the different positions that the Falcons should have addressed in this draft rather than those two spots had they not lost those two players. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think, you know, in both those guys' cases, they're two good players. Probably, you know, I think you can argue Ito Smith maybe, at least in terms of what the Falcons want in that running back position, maybe a better fit than Brian Hill, even though I think overall Brian Hill is probably the better running back. But Oluokun, you know, probably not as good as Jermaine Grace, but certainly could do some stuff, I guess. And so, you know, hopefully 3 years from now, no one's going to remember those two guys and be like, yeah, Smith and Oluokun did a pretty good job. I don't know.
I know we're going to talk about the first two rounds or first three rounds later. And it's no knock on our third round choice. But if you're going to get all these like rangy athletic linebackers, why would you not try to get like a defensive lineman to like keep them clean? Because I have only person that I like have somewhat faith in like getting between blocks right now is Duke Riley. And that's retarded.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's an underrated aspect of Riley's game. But, like, I don't know, man. It's like, you look at this linebacker core, and they're very undersized. They can't handle trash and play in traffic at all. But it really hasn't hurt the team all that much. I mean, it did a little bit last year when our offense wasn't lighting up teams and Miami and Buffalo were pounding it down our throat in the second halves of those games. But for the most part, like, they've been able to get by with it. And so it has me questioning a lot, like, how important is run defense in the NFL at this point in time in 2018? I don't know.
I know Justice says the running game is basically obsolete now, so it doesn't really matter. So
yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of people, like, when I saw, who was it? I forget his name, Guga, the Seahawks guy. Talking about why do teams run the football? And I was like, teams run the football because they want to be balanced and they want to stay on schedule. And then, like, you just look at the data and it's like, yeah, you know, if a team wants to run the football, let them. I mean, basically, at this point, because it's like, yeah, as long as we can defend the pass, it's all going to work out, I guess, in the long run. I mean, obviously, I say that knowing that when we get to September and you know, whoever it is, trying to think, Mark Ingram is gashing us for 123 yards or something like that, I'm going to be flipping out on this podcast about why can't we stop the run and Devondre Campbell, you're the worst, and Deion Jones, all that type of stuff. But like,
trade him.
Yeah, you know, now that we're here in late April, I can sit here and pretend that like running the football doesn't matter. But yeah, let's before we get to the first two day picks, let's. I want to plug Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with host John Ledger, Trevor Sikkema. Of course, they will be recapping all the surprises and great picks and bad picks in this 2018 in the draft over on the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, Jalen, let's circle back and talk about the first 2 days. Certainly, let's talk about the first round pick. I know I have sort of, it took me a while to come around to the Calvin Ridley pick. I'm curious sort of, you know, what was your initial reaction to that pick? And then sort of now that you've had 48 hours to sort of digest it, what have been your thoughts since?
When I saw it, like, it was like I said, I think the show that we did, I don't really like, really didn't mind who they drafted because they earned my trust pretty much. But I was like, I was sitting like, I was obviously a big Maurice Hurst fan, so I was just like sitting there like he's right there. Go ahead and take him. Then he kept falling, so I kind of got over it. But most of the time I was just like, what? We don't really need a wide receiver. Like, we definitely need like three defensive tackles. why are we taking a wide receiver when you have Julio Jones? And I was obviously, me and you were probably higher on Marvin Hall than most people. So
yeah,
I was just like, why are you having somebody come in and do exactly what they can do for like I just think the draft is mostly about like value, and a wide receiver in the first round is not like good value. So I was confused about it, but Ridley's good. I don't have a problem with him. So I hope he balls out.
Yeah. I mean, like when you're a team like Carolina and you have Torrey Smith and Devin Funchess, taking a wide receiver in the first round makes a lot of sense. You know,
that's good value for them.
Yeah. But when you're a team like Atlanta and you have Julio Jones and, you know, you can literally put anybody else out in the field, and as long as you have Julio Jones, like, you don't really necessarily need to invest a lot of picks, or at least high picks in wide receivers to get, you know, a comparable return on investment that other teams would have to do to get the same. with their first round picks. And so that was part of why I don't necessarily agree with drafting wide receivers early in the first round, particularly for a team like the Falcons. But, you know, sort of thinking about it later and coming to terms with it, like, you know, the thing I said on Friday's episode is like, it's kind of a hedge against Steve Sarkisian, because like the knock on Steve Sarkisian, at least for me, is like his route combinations are vanilla as heck. And it's basically like similar to what we had when Cutter was here and what Malarkey was here, which is you rely on your guys to line up against that cornerback or whoever's covering them and beat him in one-on-one coverage. And the Falcons receivers other than Julio Jones aren't necessarily great at doing that. And Calvin Ridley probably will be really good at doing that. And so for what this offense currently is, Calvin Ridley's probably the best possible number two receiver that you could have. And so from that perspective, even though I don't necessarily think that's the way it should be, it does make a lot more sense to draft a guy like Calvin Ridley and hope that you can sort of build the 2012 version of what the, you know, of this new offense under Steve Sarkisian, because I think the realization is that 2016 offense ain't coming back with Sark calling, based assuming, you know, the 2017 version of the offense isn't sort of a 1 year aberration. But if you assume just even with improvement from Sark, like that 2016 offense ain't coming back, because you just don't have a play caller that really understands his receiver skill set. And you know, like the funny thing is like with Calvin Ridley, and I'll cede the floor to you a little bit, Jalen, to respond. But like when you look at his skill set, it's a lot closer to Taylor Gabriel's skill set than I think people realize. Like you see people like, oh, he's like Roddy White. And I was like, no, he's not really Roddy White. He's more
absolutely not.
Yeah, you know, he's like he's more Taylor Gabriel than he is Roddy White, and he's more Harry Douglas than he is Mohamed Sanu. Even though what he'll be asked to do in the offense, you know, he'll probably replace Mohamed Sanu next year and whatnot. But like, so it's one of those things where it's interesting, where like you'll probably see Ridley doing all the things that we should have seen Taylor Gabriel do last year. And we saw Taylor Gabriel do in 2016. And so it'll be interesting to sort of see, you know, obviously if Ridley can do those things, obviously it would be a huge boost to the offense, because that was really probably, you know, if you want to be the guy that says like, what's the one thing that was missing from 2016 to 2017 that made a huge difference, it was basically taking Taylor
Gabriel.
Yeah, I mean you know, we know. But I was just saying, like, in the execution of it all, like, you take Taylor Gabriel, who was arguably one of the most dynamic receivers in the NFL in 2016. You know, he finished number one in DVOA ahead of Julio Jones with Football Outsiders metric, to, like, whatever he was in 2017, which was probably, like, 108th or something like that. And so that huge, you know, it's like going from Matt Ryan to Blake Bortles at the wide receiver position. So that makes a difference. But sort of what are your thoughts on sort of Ridley's fit in the Sarkisian offense? I know you're much more critical of Sark and his play calling than I have been, and I'm pretty critical.
Just to make sure, you're along the line of thinking with me that this is basically if Sark messes up, then he just is awful. Like, that's probably much what they thought about when they drafted him.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, yeah, like, it'll be pretty, yeah, pretty much. If Sark can't figure out a way, like, you know, I'm not expecting Ridley to come in and have like a 1,000-yard season or anything like that, but he should be able to thrive as a number three receiver in this offense, as good as a number three receiver as we should see, you know?
Yeah, okay. Just making sure. I'm just going to throw a crazy prediction out. I'm going to say he's going to get like 560 something ish yards, just because they're probably gonna run the ball more, because they're gonna get tired of being on 3rd and 8 and not being able to get 8 yards. So they're probably gonna run the ball a lot more, or do tosses and jet sweeps with our new 7th rounder or 6th rounder.
Yeah,
but I don't have a problem. I think he probably is the best route runner on the team right now, Ridley, which is not really saying much because he's 38 years old coming out of the draft. So
yeah, man, like, I think Ridley, you know, I think really where Ridley's going to make his hay, assuming that, you know, Sark makes it through this season, and when he gets elevated to that number two spot next year, because I just can't imagine a world where the Falcons are. Well, no, I can't imagine a world because they're the Falcons. But I can't imagine a world if I'm, you know, putting my good GM brain on, like Mohamed Sanu is going to be a 30-year-old slot receiver that makes almost $8 million. Like, why would you do that? But, like, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, the duo of Julio and Ridley, like the thing I said on Twitter was, like, the Falcons only really got, like, 1 year of the Julio-Roddy combination that Dimitroff was, you know, secretly dreaming about. You know, when he was the months before they traded up for Julio, which was 2012. And I think the Falcons are hoping that with Ridley and Julio, they can get like 3 years of that. And so, you know, obviously Ridley can do it. The question is really sort of how many more peak years of Julio are we going to have? Like, he could be kind of spent in 2 years, or he could have like another 5 good years. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how that works. And if they can get like 3 peak years of Julio and Ridley doing their thing and being the best wide receiver duo in the league, which I think they have the capacity of doing, I think, you know, we'll, you know, I don't know if it'll make Sark into this offensive genius, but it'll certainly make his job much, much easier if he has the best wide receiver duo in the league, which we kind of know that we might not have the best running back duo in the league any further, which is sort of the Ito Smith. There's a lot of moving parts, but I think it at least gives Sark a chance of being successful. That's what I'll say. And so my positivity has won out in optimism, and looking at where the offense could be in a couple of years, I think, you know, it might work out in our favor, even though right now it's just kind of like hard to picture a well-run Sark offense, I guess.
I've let it known on plenty of things that, if the offense is good again this year, I'm not giving credit to Sark. I'm giving it to Greg Knapp. So whatever happens, Sark got to go.
Okay. So let's turn our attention to the defense. We've said enough on Sark, and I'm sure we will say much, much more in the coming months. So we'll have plenty of takes for that. But the defensive picks with, you know, I think the cornerback position was a very underrated need. They got Isaiah Oliver in round 2. D-tackle was a very obvious need. They got Deidre Sinnott in round 3. What were your thoughts on those two picks?
I love the Isaiah Oliver pick. I was like in the car on the way home when they picked him, and I legit almost crashed because I was so excited.
Okay.
Because I really liked him. Like, he was like my third favorite corner behind like Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson, both of which went to the Packers, which is like, this is kind of a tangent, but who let that happen?
Yeah, I thought there was a chance Josh Jackson would like slide in the first round, but him falling all the way to like the middle of round 2 was crazy to me.
But back to Oliver, he's we really with that, especially with the Saints and Panthers drafting all like 6'2 plus wide receivers, we need somebody who's a little bit taller. Even though I have no problem with Alford and truly like handling bigger receivers, but having somebody that you can like attach to them and still not get burnt deep, which is a really big trait of Oliver's. He's really good there. It's not getting like burnt deep all the time. It helps a lot more and allows you to do a lot more stuff with your back end.
Yeah, like, you know, the whole getting another cornerback, like the idea sort of behind it was like, oh, let's do what the Broncos did when they drafted Bradley Roby after they already had Aqib Talib and Chris Harris. Do you feel like Oliver can be that sort of Bradley Roby type, even though he may not be a starter right away? He'll basically be as good or as close as good as a starter and close to on the level of Alford and Trufant type of corner.
I'm not going to say he's going to be better than True, because True was really good. But he might be better than Alford in like a year or two. Like, Alford's peak, I think he might be there in like a couple years.
Yeah.
Hot take, I know.
No, I don't think that's a hot take. I think that's like, that's the sort of ceiling where you're looking at him, where, like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, again, you're right. I don't think it's fair to say like his ceiling is Trufant, sort of where Trufant was like a top 5 corner in the league at his peak. Arguably, that you could make an argument that he was the best corner in the league at his peak, but you know, where Alford, certainly last year, probably his peak season, where he was a top 10, top 15 corner, you know, at his peak. So, like, I think Oliver has that sort of potential. That's where his ceiling could be. But even if he doesn't hit that level, if he can sort of be, you know, like comparable to bad Robert Alford or bad starting Desmond Trufant, which people make a big deal about how, oh, they're awful and whatever, and, but they're like still, and really,
still
good.
Really good.
Yeah. So like, you know, like if that's your third corner, like I'll take that any day of the week.
I agree with that. I really like that pick. That was probably my favorite pick of the draft.
So I know you mentioned earlier that you really wanted the Falcons to really go after these D tackles. You know, I know Dejan Sinai is not necessarily going to set the world on fire, but what were your thoughts on his fit and sort of is he at least a stopgap to, you know, get this team to where they can, whether it's later this offseason or possibly next year, next offseason, do you feel like the Sinai can sort of bridge that gap at the D tackle position?
I just wanted somebody who could like rush the passer. Like I didn't really even care about like stopping the run. Obviously, got my statements earlier, and another like little side tangent. I hate the Raiders for because they took the guy I wanted in the third round,
PJ Hall.
And yeah, I wanted PJ Hall really bad, and the Raiders took him about a round and a half earlier than I thought he would go. So I hate them. But I have no problem with Sinai. Well, Sinai.
I don't know how to say it. TD says it's Sinai. I go back and forth. And you know, the USF pronunciation guy says it's Sinai. So it doesn't matter. Say it however you want to say it, and it'll be right, I guess.
All right. So he's going to be like first of all, I'm going to just say he's not Grady Jarrett. So people can stop saying that. He's just not. All right. I hate the Browns, too. They just took Trent Thompson as UDFA. I think he's going to be really good for, like, the run defense. Like you said, he's a two-down player, but I think he can play on third downs and still be, like, decent. I think he'll give you more than Courtney Upshaw ever did, so.
You mean he's not going to be rolling around on the turf trying to sack a quarterback?
Yeah, you know, no more of that. He's definitely going to give you more than B.J. Hill would have, so. Anything like that is fine with me. You got him about a round later than people wanted to take B.J. Hill.
Yeah, man. Like, I think, you know, I think Sinai will, you know, I think if he's our fourth best pass rusher, that probably means we don't have a good pass rush. Like, that's what I'll say.
Oh, man, come on.
But,
I got to put that out there like that.
But, like, for, like, when he plays in the base defense and, like, can he provide pressure in the base, like, Brooks Reed and, you know, more than what Shelby does. Like, yeah, I think he can do that, you know, pretty well. Certainly more than Ataba Rubin would give you there. But, like, if, you know, basically, like, it's Grady Jarrett, it's Tack McKinley, it's Vic Beasley, and, like, we're putting all our hopes to sack the quarterback on those guys. And, you know, Jack Crawford will make a play every now and then, and we'll be like, hey, thanks, Jack. And then, like, you know, it's still a hole, but, like, you know, I feel like with those three, like, we can get by. And with our secondary, we can maybe dial up some more blitzes this year. And so Campbell can do a lot more and be maybe that fourth best pass rusher that you know, Crawford and Sinai isn't going to be. I'm not sitting here saying Campbell's going to have, like, 12 sacks or anything like that. But we can be a little bit more exotic with our blitzes, I guess, now that we got Oliver. So I don't feel like we've solved the pass rush.
Bring back a Mike Nolan?
I don't think we've solved the pass rush issues, but I feel like we can at least, you know, it's a stopgap, I guess, to get through this year and sort of see where Vic Beasley is, where Tack is, and then we can go at it again, I guess, in 2019, really. You know, it sounds like I'm writing off our pass rush this year. Like, I'm not, but it's like, I think we'll be okay. You know,
if you're not, then I am, because we really just needed a pass rush, a defensive tackle, and we didn't do anything about it.
So I'm assuming then you're probably looking at some of these guys, like, I guess, is Benny Logan and John Hankins still unsigned?
I know Hankins is still unsigned. I'm not sure about Logan yet. I think he signed like a 1 year or something, maybe, unless that was just like last year. Because if he's still there, then I would love to bring him. But we're broke right now, so.
Yeah. So we're kind of hoping, you know, we get some money from, let me look it up. Hankins is still unsigned. No, Logan signed with the Titans.
Oh, well.
Carl Klug's out there. Everybody's favorite Carl Klug. Jay Bromley, Tyron Walker.
A whole bunch of uninspiring names.
Connor Barwin.
It's pretty much like Hankins or bust, right?
Pretty much. I mean,
you can get like some people, but they're not. They're going to play like 8 snaps a game. I mean, if
like
that.
You could like sign Robert Ayers or Lamar Houston and see maybe they got something left in the tank. I guess Tamba Hali, maybe, but like you're basically desperate at that point.
Yeah, those are some people you sign when like somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Who knows? I guess.
Luckily, Tack can go through people. He doesn't have to run around them, so maybe that'll help.
Yeah, man.
Maybe they'll play him a little bit more, like inside, just a little bit.
If Tack builds on what he did last year, and if Vic bounces back to what he was in 2016, and if Grady Jarrett continues to improve, we'll be fine. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I'm not as optimistic or confident that's going to happen as other people are, but like I'll let people live in that world, because I kind of need to live in that world to be okay with the pass rush. And then, you know, we'll get to September, and if it's bad, then I'll complain about it then, and we'll figure it out, I guess. I don't know.
Luckily, I have more faith in our back end. I have more faith in our DBs now that they'll be able to give us more coverage sacks and actual good pass rush. So, another thumbs up for the Isaiah Oliver pick.
Yeah, man. You know, and maybe we can throw some more cornerback blitzes if we play some dime, because we'll still have 5 DBs on the field and have Brian Poole just wrecking dudes.
They're going to put Brian Hill in. They're going to put – no, not Brian Hill. LOL. Rest in peace. They're going to put Brian Poole in – KZ at safety.
yeah, man. You know, I'm for us, you know, pulling the Rex Ryan and just throwing out like all the DBs we have, because like we got 7 good ones now with Oliver, I think, you know.
Do it.
You know, and like if we just want to play like Deion, a 3-1-7 or something like that, like I'll do it.
Oh, no. Never mind.
I mean, you want to put the 11 best guys, you know, Tack, Vic, Grady Jarrett, and Deion Jones, and then the 7 DBs on the field. Like, I'm for it. Like, you know, just be exotic or whatever you want to do, Dan Quinn. I don't care.
That's more than exotic. That's borderline crazy.
Well, look, put Keanu Neal up on defensive end. He's more physical than half the dudes on our team, so. Why not, man?
He probably better pass rusher than Devondre Campbell. Cough.
Oh, man. So, Jalen, any final thoughts on this Falcons draft class?
If I could grade it, I'm not going to grade it pick by pick, because that's too much work. And I don't know who those last like 3 people are besides like the linebacker, so I can't really grade them until I know what they are and who they are. The first 3 picks I knew, and I'll give it like an A-, just because I don't think we should have drafted a wide receiver in the first round. But, hey, I hope he does really, really well. So, good draft, another one.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we'll see what happens at D-tackle over the next 3 months. Maybe they make a move, and if they do, I think it'll make that, you know, those first 3 picks look better than they currently look right now. But I think they look pretty good, so. You know, we got players. I mean, we got players that I think will play for this team for a long time and be good. So I can't really complain about it. But, you know, certainly there's still some holes on the roster that probably need to be addressed. But, you know, there's 3 more months to, I guess, address some of those holes. And, you know, right now I can be optimistic. And then, you know, usually when what happens is everybody goes overboard on the hype with the draft picks in May. And then in June, I'm really negative because, like, the hype train is just off the tracks with some of these guys. And then so I'll be real negative about it in June. And then, you know, training camp will start and I'll be fine again. So
imagine if we had this draft like 4 years ago, how ecstatic we'd probably be.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, basically.
We're getting greedy at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how it is. That's how it is. You're right. You're absolutely right. You know, we got Ridley, you know, if he's a Pro Bowl wide receiver or close enough to it. You know,
I think he'll make one or 2.
Yeah, just I mean, look,
Look, everybody's getting old.
Julio ain't going to stay healthy for one of these seasons. So, you know, Ridley will be our go-to guy one of these years over the next 4 or 5 years. So, yeah, he'll make at least one Pro Bowl.
Right.
All right, Jalen, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter. And if you're not doing daily mock drafts, what are you going to do for the next 3 months?
Hell if I know. I really don't know. I'm probably gonna do some film work on the people we drafted, and then as training camp and everything goes out, and so I'm really waiting for like the first set of cuts just to see who I should actually look at of the UDFAs, and like maybe somebody who will make the roster. But besides that, I really don't have any plans. The draft is over, so I'm kind of just waiting for the season to start.
Okay, man. Well, where can people hit you up on Twitter if they just want to bring those fire Sark takes?
At Jalen Muhammad, JalenMuhammad. And I have a crying Jordan meme.
There you go, man. All right, Jalen, I appreciate you coming on. Get some sleep. I know I'm certainly going to try to get some over these next couple of days. So, all right, man.
We'll talk all to right, you later. Sir. Bye.
Okay, guys, that's it. Draft is over. We'll be back tomorrow with a sort of another recap of the whole draft process. I'm sure we'll talk more about the first couple of picks and dabble a little bit on the day three picks. Low key depth, you know, special teams matters, hashtag. I didn't plug. I was so tired last night that I didn't do the plugs at the end, so I'll do them here. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, you can do so at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. But if it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you prefer another social media platform like Facebook, you can go to the Facebook page. That is Locked On Falcons. Give us a like while you're there. If you prefer email, where there are no character limits and you don't have to be bogged down in the horrors of social media to do so, it's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. If you can also leave a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com and FalcFans.com, where the podcast and other Falcons-related content is posted daily. So, guys, appreciate you guys tuning in on this weekend. I know this is a Sunday episode, so, you know, appreciate the download and the listen if you want to take it easy this Sunday. We'll be back tomorrow again with more Falcons draft content. Tuesday, I don't know. We'll see about that. I might need a break, but we will have somebody on this upcoming week. I will promise you that for a Calvin Ridley breakdown. We'll probably do, since he's the first round pick, we might do multiple ones. I have additional people coming on to do their thoughts on the Falcons draft. So that will certainly be something to look forward in May. And we'll try to do at least one episode devoted to each draft prospect over the next, you know, 2 months, I guess. You know, I'd like to believe that we can get them all done in May, but knowing me, that's not going to happen. I'd like to get them out before July, though, unlike last year. And we got to fill content over the next couple of months. So the Q&A stuff, we'll do Q&As, but the fan talks, we'll do more of those over the next 3 months. So guys, if you want to, you know, get on board for a fan talk episode where you can come on this podcast and chat with me for 30 minutes about, you know, Falcons offseason, what your expectations for the upcoming season. You know, if you're going to go to the Cardinals game to watch me root on my beloved Josh Rosen against the Atlanta Falcons this upcoming year, you know, we can talk about that as well. So whatever you guys want to talk about. But if you do want to get on board with that, you know, basically hit that sign up sheet. Just go ahead, send me an email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Tell me sort of what you want to talk about, your availability, you know, if you have Skype, what your Skype contact is, if you have a phone number, what your phone number is, all that sort of contact information. And, you know, we can start talking about, you know, doing that over the next couple of months and getting, you know, talking with you guys and getting back in touch with that. So definitely hit me up if you're curious about that. I'm sure, you know, there was like a dozen people that hit me up last summer that wanted to do that. I'm sure there's going to be like, you know, my ego is now, you know, there's going to be like 50 people and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get all of you. And then I click on my inbox later this week and there's like one email. You know, that's how it goes. But we'll see how it goes, guys. So I appreciate that. And yeah, until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.